The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Carrie Lawson from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from Oprah Magazine. Our first article is from the Wellness section. Happy Gut, Happy Life. How Your Digestive Tract Impacts Your Mood. Experts explain the powerful links between what you eat and how you feel. This article is by Emily Lawrence. Thankfully, we've come a long way from the idea that mental health issues are all in your head. In fact, there's a growing body of evidence that what's happening in your digestive system can play a big role in your mood and emotional state, and vice versa. And those so-called gut feelings or instincts, they're pretty real too. The gut is the most complex organ, secondary only to the brain, says Emeryn Mayer, MD, a gastroenterologist and neuroscientist. It is filled with millions of nerves as well as large portions of your immune and hormone systems, he says, all working hard to transform the food you eat into the nutrients you need to thrive. They stay in sync. Your gut chats with your brain 24/7 via a complex network called the gut-brain axis. And it's this network that can potentially shape your mental and physical health. The gut's relationship to mental health is a newer field of study. And full disclosure, there is a lot we still don't know about how the gut and the brain work together. Many recent studies are preliminary or based only on cell or mice experiments. But what we do know is illuminating and has implications for how we'll address mental health in the near future. To learn more, we talked to top experts in this field about how much our emotions are influenced by our guts. Inside the mind-gut connection. As mentioned earlier, your gut and brain are constantly talking to each other like teens in a group chat. How this communication works is complicated, but emerging research suggests that your gut microbiome, the vast community of bacteria and other microbes in your digestive system, likely plays a significant role. These bugs chow down on your undigested food scraps, pizza, grain bowls, and everything in between, to make various kinds of metabolites. Science speak for food byproducts. These metabolites trigger different responses from your brain and body, says Mayer. For example, say you're eating a kale salad or veggie sandwich for lunch. Your gut microbiota eat is to producing short-chain fatty acids in the process. Some research suggests that these acids may prompt your endocrine system to make the hormone leptin, which tells your brain that you're full. Your microbiome also makes neurotransmitters, a type of chemical messenger that carries signals between your nervous system and the rest of the body. Chief among these is the happiness hormone, serotonin. Between 90 and 95% of our serotonin is in the gut. And a lot of serotonin is made in the gut, says Uma Naidoo, N-A-I-D-O-O, MD, a nutritional psychiatrist and nutrition specialist, and the author of Calm Your Mind with Food. In your brain, serotonin hugely influences your mood and sleep habits. Elsewhere in your body, it's used to help regulate appetite and gut function. Research suggests that changes to your gut microbiome can impact your body's balance of serotonin and other neurotransmitters, which can potentially mess with your mood. having a gut feeling. Having a healthy, happy gut full of good bugs working overtime to relieve inflammation and make good-for-you metabolites typically correlates with a positive mood, less stress, and a sharper mind, says Naidu. But the gut-brain relationship is complex, says Lin Chang, MD, a gastroenterologist specializing in disorders of the gut-brain interactions. Sometimes life, or illness, or stress, comes along to disrupt the balance, which may have implications for your health. For example, eating tons of ultra-processed foods on the reg can cause inflammation, says Naidu. Inflammation harms the good bugs in your gut and promotes the growth of bad ones, which might affect your mental health. In fact, a 2021 review found that people with various psychiatric disorders, including depression and anxiety, tend to have greater numbers of pro-inflammatory bugs than anti-inflammatory ones in their microbiomes. On the flip side, people who are more resilient to stress tend to have lots of anti-inflammatory gut microbes. A chronically unhealthy diet and chronic abnormal signaling from the gut to the brain can have major negative effects, like inflammation in the brain, adds Mayer. Brain inflammation is associated with depression, as well as increased risk of neurodegenerative diseases like Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. Chang says that regularly experiencing digestive problems, or even a bout with severe food poisoning, can also change the microbial balance of the gut and throw a wrench in your mental health. Conversely, she says, surviving trauma or prolonged levels of stress can lead to gastrointestinal problems. Irritable bowel syndrome, IBS, a disorder that causes symptoms like chronic stomach pain, diarrhea, or constipation, is one of the clearest examples we have of the gut-brain connection at work. With IBS, there's nothing physically amiss that would explain your symptoms, says Chang. Instead, experts believe something happens to throw your gut-brain communication out of whack. We don't definitively know what triggers that imbalance, but increasingly, IBS often pops up in people who have depression, anxiety, and other mental health conditions. Mental health doesn't just begin from the neck above, Naidu says. It's really the whole body and also in the gut microbiome. How to have a happy gut. It bears repeating that we're in the early stages of understanding the microbiome. We're not at the point yet where we can say, prescribe a probiotic for depression, says Chang. But all evidence suggests that what happens in your digestive tract is reflective of, or can predict, what's going on in your brain. And the food you eat has a major impact on your gut, says Naidu. To support a happy gut, all three doctors recommend eating a balanced, nutrient-rich diet while avoiding or limiting inflammatory, ultra-processed eats. Mayer is specifically a fan of a Mediterranean-style diet. Doing so will support an abundance of good bacteria and decrease inflammation, says Naidu. And it's associated with a reduced risk of depression. Talk about a win-win. Fiber is also crucial. If you've been skimping on vegetables, Naidu recommends gradually increasing serving sizes to work up to the recommended 25 grams of fiber a day. This slow and steady approach lets your digestive system gradually adjust while avoiding annoying symptoms like gas, bloating, constipation, or diarrhea. Chang adds that fermented foods like yogurt and kimchi are also essential because they throw more beneficial bacteria into the mix. She also suggests eating foods loaded with the amino acid tryptophan, which your body uses to make serotonin. Options include tuna, oats, bananas, chicken, turkey, prunes, and peanuts. Of course, mental health is bigger than what you eat. Just focusing on your diet and not changing your lifestyle misses the boat, says Mayer. Finding healthy ways to manage stress, prioritizing self-care, going to therapy if it's helpful for you, and taking prescription medications if needed can all support both your mental health and your gut health, right alongside a nutritious diet. Parts of this article were edited due to time. Over under Hotels We Love, Rock House, Turks, and Caicos. Expect laid-back luxury and panoramic views at this oceanfront resort. And this article is by Sheil Shah. My wife and I arrived in Turks and Caicos with our 2-year-old in tow, looking for a little sun and to recharge following a long and busy New York winter. We arrived at Rock House, a leading hotel's property located in Providenciales. If you're looking for the typical Turks and Caicos beach vacation, this isn't it, and thankfully so. Rock House is a quiet, intimate, high-end resort a few miles from the legendary Grace Bay Beach. Best of all, especially for those traveling with young kids or for a short stretch, it's a 3-hour non-stop flight from New York City and a 10-minute ride from the airport, and yet seemingly a world away. As its name suggests, the 14-acre oceanfront hotel with 600 feet of frontage is etched into the limestone, sitting some 95 feet above sea level. Much like the famous hotels on the Amalfi Coast with cliff-hanging beach clubs, this one has rocky beaches and beach chairs on a pier that overlook dramatic, unobstructed views of the Atlantic. You'd never know from the unassuming entrance that there are 46 oceanfront villa-style rooms and ongoing plans for expansion, which is precisely the resort's appeal. Unlike so many upscale properties, with soaring ceilings and miles of marble, Rock House wears its luxury lightly, reflecting with its crisp white palette and blonde wood finishes the island's overall laid-back vibes. Situated at the end of a long, narrow staircase, our one-bedroom suite opened up dramatically to 270-degree turquoise ocean views. As it turned out, our little one loved the small private pool so much that we found little impetus to venture out. While staying put saved us a lot of time, not having to pack all her things to head over to the main pool, I could imagine coming back for a romantic getaway and parking at the stunning 100-foot infinity pool. Centrally located right next to the restaurant Vita, it's a great quiet place to spend a few hours in the sun or a private cabana. Although the property only has one main dining option, we found all of our meals there to be delicious, and their staff to be super but not overly attentive. As vegetarians, there were plenty of options on the menu for us for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We especially enjoyed the fresh Greek salad, eggplant parmigiana, piazza al fungi, pasta al pesto Genovese, and the tiramisu affogato. Make sure not to miss out on the fresh bread which they bake on the premises daily. Though traveling with a toddler doesn't allow much in the way of browsing, spaing, or cocktailing, I did note the small but tastefully curated gift shop. On our to-do list for next time when we come back, just the two of us, in-room spa treatments, a seated jetty, and several private seating areas to relax with a cocktail along the property's cliffs. Over in Culture and News and Books, how to help rebuild bookstores and libraries lost in the Los Angeles wildfires. 7 organizations and fundraisers you can support right now. This article is by Sophia Lodato. January's deadly wildfires in Southern California have displaced hundreds of thousands of people, destroying homes, businesses, and lives in the process. The fires have also deeply impacted local libraries, schools, and independent booksellers in the Eaton and Palisades areas. As Magic Cabin Cares, one of the charities we're highlighting below, aptly says on the site, books offer an opportunity to escape, heal, and continue learning, even in challenging times, which is why we've gathered together several organizations that support victims during this time. Some of these charities support libraries directly, such as rebuilding efforts towards the Palisades branch of the LAPL library that burned down, while others focus on directly donating books, resources, money, and services for library workers or students who have been affected. In any case, each and every one is a worthy cause, and all could use your help. Zibby's Bookshop Library Rebuild. Zibby's Bookshop in Santa Monica is raising money to repurchase library books that were destroyed in four Palisades schools that burned down in the fires. Thanks to Eleni's cookbooks, you'll even get a sweet treat if you donate. This organization helps students, many of whom also lost their homes, reunite with their favorite reads. Book Industry Charitable Foundation, BINC. The BINC Foundation, a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping booksellers and comic stores, has set up a matching gift fundraiser to help those affected by the wildfires. Donations through the fundraiser go directly to book and comic store employees, owners, and their families who have experienced financial, medical, and mental health hardships due to the fires and other disasters. American Library Association, ALA, Disaster Relief Fund. The American Library Association, ALA, has a specific disaster relief fund for times like these. Donating to the fund will help restore library services and continue to offer support for the communities those libraries serve. As written on their website, libraries are a vital lifeline in times of crisis, providing refuge, resources, and essential services. Diesel, a bookstore. Diesel, an independent bookstore located in Santa Monica, was hit particularly hard by the fires. Their site has several suggestions for donations, including a direct GoFundMe for their affected booksellers, donating a book through their website to the LA Wildfires Book Drive, or giving an online gift certificate. Magic Cabin Cares. Magic Cabin Cares is a nonprofit created by Magic Cabin Books that collects, organizes, and distributes new or gently used children's books to families in need per their site. While the initial goal was to focus on those who were impacted by the fires, the long-term efforts are to support families facing all types of crisis. They not only donate, but assist overwhelmed donation centers with managing and sorting donations. LA County Library and Altadena Library. LA County Library and Altadena Libraries have partnered together to raise money to purchase necessities for those impacted by the fires. Donations will support these critical programs to help our neighbors get back on their feet, from new books and school supplies to Wi-Fi hotspots to menstrual products. They are currently only accepting monetary donations. Wajia House Book Drive. Wajia House Bookstore in Tempe, Arizona, has posted a call on social media. They are hosting a book drive through the month of February in support of the library in the Pacific Palisades. Wajia House is collecting and sending new and gently used books to help rebuild the library. Books can be of all genres and in any quantity, and you even get a little treat for donating in person. Over in Wholeness, how to manifest like you really mean it. There's scientific proof that envisioning your goals can help you achieve them, but that's just step one. This article is by Eleni N. Gage. You don't have to make vision boards to know that manifesting or putting your heart's desires out into the universe to will them into being is a major phenomenon. When she performed at the Glastonbury Music Festival last year, Dua Lipa told the crowd that she had manifested her appearance on the pyramid stage, writing down details such as the fact that she'd appear on Friday so she could party for the rest of the weekend. As an inspiring actor, Jim Carrey famously wrote himself a $10 million check for acting services rendered and carried it with him everywhere. Several blockbusters later, and ka-ching! But for every person with a mind-blowing manifestation story, there's another whose dreams haven't come true or who might even verge on delusional. The friend who thinks her trifling boyfriend will finally change his ways. The guy who won't look for a job despite mounting debt because he's sure this is the year his band or acting career or podcast will finally take off. It's enough to make even the most mystical person yearn for some empirical truths, a scientific answer to the question, does manifestation work? We went straight to some scientists who have researched the topic. The verdict? Hashtag it's complicated. What is manifestation? We define manifestation as the belief that if you visualize positive things, the universe or a higher power hears those affirmations and then has a part in blessing you with those things, explains Lucas Dixon, PhD, of the University of Queensland in Australia, who conducts research in self-help and how it influences our beliefs and actions. That's right. Despite the woo factor, the concept has been studied scientifically. Studies have shown, for example, that people who exhibit dispositional optimism, who have a more positive than pessimistic point of view, are generally happier than the Debbie Downers among us. And of course, if you believe that you can achieve your goals, it's just generally good for motivation, Dixon says. If you don't believe that you can achieve your goals, you're unlikely to put in the effort to try to start them. Visualization, specifically, has been studied in the context of athletes visualizing themselves winning, a technique Simone Biles, winner of 11 Olympic medals, swears by. But Dixon argues that extrapolating these findings for the average person is a stretch. With athletes, you have very controlled environments where everyone has a very high standard similar to each other's. So any little advantage you can get over your peers can be advantageous, he says. In other words, Steph Curry picturing himself shooting a three-pointer with a move he's made countless times may trigger brain activity and muscle memory that actually make his next shot better. That doesn't mean that simply visualizing yourself accepting a promotion or meeting a new life partner is going to unlock that opportunity for you. Another limit of manifestation. In a series of three studies, with results published in 2023, Dixon and his colleagues assessed where over 1,000 participants fell on the manifestation scale, whether they believed in the ability to cosmically attract success in life through positive self-talk, visualization, and symbolic actions, for example, acting as if something is true. Over a third of the participants endorsed manifestation beliefs. And the studies found that those who scored higher on the scale perceived themselves as more successful, had stronger aspirations for success, and believed they were more likely to achieve future success, which sounds like a win. According to the abstract, that same cohort was also more likely to be drawn to risky investments, have experienced bankruptcy, and to believe they could achieve an unlikely level of success more quickly. We think it's a kind of over-optimism, Dixon says, meaning that if you think you're destined to become wealthy, you might be more likely to see any opportunity that comes your way as a positive sign from the universe, even if it's a fraudulent or unlikely. Manifestation, according to these studies, can boost your confidence and mood in the short term. But the optimism that comes from believing you can visualize success into existence with the help of the universe could also put you in harm's way. Moving beyond manifestation to mental contrasting. Gabrielle Etienne, PhD, a professor of psychology at New York University and author of Rethinking Positive Thinking, concurs. Our lab has been investigating visualization, and we find that these visions are great for giving us a good mood, for mentally exploring possibilities for the future, she says. But when it comes to actually implementing these possibilities, they can lead to decreasing effort and success. In studies her lab has conducted looking at people enrolled in weight reduction programs, the research showed that the more positively participants fantasized about their success in the program, the fewer pounds they lost 3 months and a year down the line than those who didn't. University graduates who visualized an easy transition to work life ended up getting fewer job offers and earning less than their colleagues. The same inverse relationship applied to students who fantasized about earning good grades or building a romantic relationship with a crush. The problem, Etienne realized, is that we get so good at visualization, we trick ourselves into believing that we've already achieved whatever we're dreaming of. In fact, people's systolic blood pressure goes down when they positively fantasize, demonstrating that they're relaxing psychologically and physically. And once you achieve your dream, even if it's make-believe, you might take your foot off the gas pedal and stop trying. As Etienne puts it, these positive fantasies, they zap our energy. The fix, says Etienne, is to see your dreams as a starting point, not an end result. Fantasies are important because they are an expression of our needs, of what we don't have, Etienne explains. If you deprive someone of interpersonal relationships, they fantasize positively about getting together with their friends and family. The visualization is important because it gives action the direction. So go forth and manifest, but add another step, mental contrasting. This is imagining the obstacle that might stand in the way of achieving your fantasy, so you can identify the behaviors necessary to overcome it. Visualizing a positive future gives me directions, says Etienne. Mentally contrasting it with the obstacle in my way gives me the energy to overcome it, because I know I'm not there yet. This exercise can also provide a reality check. I will understand what I can do to overcome an obstacle, but I'll also understand if the obstacle is so formidable that I'm better off investing my energy in other projects, says Etienne. How to combine manifestation and mental contrasting. Sounds like a natural progression. Envision a dream, then imagine what you have to overcome to make it a reality. But according to Etienne, only about 10% of people, depending on the study, engage in spontaneous mental contrasting. Most of us simply enjoy living in the daydreams, while some of us ruminate solely on the obstacles in our path. That doesn't work either, warns Etienne. You need to do both in order to build a roadmap to help you get your desired outcome. Want to try it? Etienne has developed a technique called WOOP, W-O-O-P, Wish, Outcome, Obstacle, Plan. It's on her website, whoopmylife.org, to help people practice mental contrasting. In short, mental contrasting accounts for the fact that life is a mix of luck and effort, magic and work. Parts of this article were edited due to time. In conjunction with that last article, we're moving over into lifestyle. Here's how to make a vision board for manifestation. This article is by Brigitte Early. It is possible for your dreams to become reality, according to many influential leaders, Deepak Chopra, Gabrielle Bernstein, and Oprah, of course. It's as simple as manifestation. Well, that and hard work. Manifestation isn't magic or a way to dream about the new boots you desperately want. It's reserved for big life desires, strengthening your relationship, finding a new job, or traveling more. It doesn't happen overnight either. Successful manifestation starts with setting your intention, believing that it will become a reality, then taking active steps toward making that abstract idea come to fruition. And that's where vision boards come in. Whatever your goal you have, a vision board is a great tool to have during your journey. So what exactly is a vision board? It's a visual representation of your goals, says media and life coach Zakiya Larry. These typically poster-sized visuals contain all kinds of images and text that represent something you're trying to accomplish. A vision board relates to your life direction, says Larry. There are really no rules when it comes to vision boards, since it's about crafting something that will inspire you to realize your dreams and goals on a daily basis. Some vision boards focus on a similar idea, while others look at the bigger picture of what you want your future to look like. Does a vision board really work? Yes. Putting your goals on paper in this type of visual format can actually help you achieve them. It's a notion that Oprah and other celebrities like Reese Witherspoon have touted, though Oprah says she doesn't use a vision board anymore because she's a powerful manifester. And there is plenty of research to back it up. In one study, researchers found that in athletes, visualization was almost as effective as physical practice. It's also a fun arts and crafts project that allows you to see what your goals would look like once you achieve them, says Larry. So if, for example, you're hoping to be more comfortable with your body, you might put pictures of happy, healthy women coupled with empowering words like confidence on your vision board. Consider what matters most to you. Take a moment of self-reflection and figure out what's most important to you, says Larry. Think about the one or two areas of your life you really want to change and focus on the words they elicit. Then decide if your vision board should represent short-term or long-term change. Larry says using yearly benchmarks is most digestible and easiest to track progress. Then gather your inspiration. Hunt through your old stashes of magazines or scour Instagram and Pinterest for visual representations of your goal. If you want to make improvements to your kitchen, for example, clip a picture of a home that inspires you. Dying to finally take a vacay day? Find yourself a palm tree pic. Once you have enough, secure everything to a poster board or inside a page of your journal. Might we suggest the vision board page in our lovely guided journal? If you prefer to go the digital route, there are plenty of free ways to go. For simplicity, you could create a board on Pinterest. But if you want your digital vision board to more closely resemble a physical one, try an app like Canva, C-A-N-V-A, which can be used on your phone, tablet, or computer. You don't need to be a graphic design expert. This program is free. You can pay a premium for added functionality and graphics and extremely beginner-friendly. Simply import your inspiration photos and arrange them into a collage on your blank digital canvas. To make your vision board work, put it somewhere you can see it. The trick is to make sure any words you use are short and the images you choose are vivid, attractive, and glossy, so your vision board regularly catches your eye, says Larry. Once you're done, put the vision board in a place that's within your regular line of sight, your nightstand, your home office, or even by your television, because the key is to look at it as often as possible. If you're not comfortable making such a statement with your vision board, Larry suggests creating a smaller version. You can cut your poster board in half or use the largest photo frame you have on hand. Alternatively, you can use your digital vision board as your laptop's backdrop or your phone's home screen. And don't be afraid to make updates. Though a vision board is a wonderful tool to help you achieve your goals, you can't just sit back and expect it to magically make your dreams a reality. Think of your vision board as a living thing. Rip pictures off, add new ones, or start from scratch if you're so inclined, says Larry, and be open to variations of what you want to achieve. For example, if your goal is to go vegan, don't beat yourself up if you're more of a vegetarian after 6 months or so. Sometimes we miss the fact that we've achieved something great because it doesn't look exactly like we thought, says Larry. For more tips on creating a vision board, you can watch a workshop with Adam Glassman, Gail King, and Gabby Bernstein here. We're on the word of the week. Co-regulation. Let's get through it together. This article is by Cassie Hurwitz. Co-regulation. Emotions can be contagious. When a friend or family member is weeping over their divorce, it's normal to feel their pain. Empathy, you know? This ability to sense and be affected by other people's feelings is a key component of something called co-regulation. It's therapy speak for helping someone else manage their emotions, particularly in situations that are stressful or scary. Co-regulation is often used in the context of parenting. Say, when a child skins their knee and looks to a parent with that about-to-cry face. If the adult keeps their cool, calmly asking if the child is okay, instead of rushing over with a fearful expression, the child can respond in kind. The adult's demonstration of emotional control helps the child learn to regulate their own emotions and not wail in the middle of the playground, says Shannon Bennett, PhD, Associate Director of the Center for Your Mental Health at New York Presbyterian. Co-regulation can also happen between adults, Bennett says. If your partner's panic starts rising after their credit card is hacked, your opposing level-headedness alongside some supportive problem-solving might help them come down. The goal isn't quashing difficult emotions, but rather providing a supportive environment to process what your loved one is feeling, and vice versa. That can be tough when you're upset, too. It's okay to tell your kid or partner, "I need to take a break from this for a few minutes," or let them see how you get centered before dealing with something overwhelming, Bennett says. Strengthening your own emotional regulation skills will bolster your ability to co-regulate and improve your reactions to stressful situations. Therapy and mindfulness practices like journaling, breathwork, and meditation can push you to identify your triggers and move toward healthier reactions. Over in culture and news and TV and movies, Oprah is hosting a menopause special with Halle Berry, Naomi Watts, Maria Shriver, and more. Get ready for another impactful conversation. This article is by Cassie Hurwitz. Oprah is no stranger to unpacking important topics, especially those relating to women's health. In 2023, Oprah shed light on a life stage that all women experience, menopause, hosting her groundbreaking conversation, The Menopause Talk. Now Oprah is returning to the subject with a new and, as always, enlightening conversation airing next month on ABC. In an Oprah Winfrey special, The Menopause Revolution, Oprah will sit down with Halle Berry, Naomi Watts, and Maria Shriver, three women who have been outspoken about their journeys of misdiagnosis and painful symptoms. Shriver previously discussed her menopause experience with Oprah Daily. You can watch here. Also present will be Mary Claire Haver, MD and OBGYN and the author of The New Menopause, and Rhonda Voskuhl, V-O-S-K-U-H-L, MD, a neurologist who specializes in menopause. P.S. Haver also lent her expertise to our 2025 Menopause O Awards. They'll provide medical background and insights, while Leanne Morgan, a comic who talks about perimenopause and menopause in her routine, will share her personal experience. From confusing symptoms, menopause can lead to weakened bones, dry vagina, frozen shoulder, and more, to treatments. Estrogen is the gold standard. Oprah's latest special will teach you what you need to know. Whether you're approaching perimenopause, in the thick of menopause, or in the years beyond. Of the special, Oprah says, "This show starts the revolution of answers for millions of women throughout this country. We discuss what you need to know to best advocate for yourself when it comes to mental health, sleep, weight, sex, and your brain, so we can ultimately see how freeing menopause can be in your life with the best yet to come." An Oprah Winfrey special, The Menopause Revolution, will air on ABC Monday, March 31st at 10:01 p.m. Eastern. You can watch it the following day on Disney Plus and Hulu. over in relationships. 7 reasons you're dreaming about your ex. 3 experts explain what you're really thinking about. This article is by Jenna Autori-Dedek. In an ideal world, bedtime would be a moment of peace and relaxation, but it isn't always that simple. Even if you fall asleep easily, drifting off typically opens the door to another world, the one in your head. And while your night visions can sometimes be controlled in a cool way, as through lucid dreaming, they can also quickly become a source of stress when you start worrying about crazy vivid dreams during waking life, particularly if your ex keeps showing up in your dreams. Whether your breakup ended amicably or left you unglued and struggling to get over them, your ex is back in your mind anyway. And now you can't seem to shake the thought of them, even when you're awake. So, what does it mean for your real life if your former flame keeps appearing to invade your slumber? Surprisingly, experts say it's not necessarily a sign that you have unresolved issues and/or want to get back together with them. Dreaming about an ex, is, even one you haven't seen in years, is normal, and usually about something else entirely. Here, psychologists and a dream analyst break down the most common reasons it's happening. Your ex is just a symbol. Humans have been trying to make sense of their bedtime visions since well before recorded history, says Gary Taub, T-O-U-B, Ph.D., a senior training analyst at the C.G. Jung Institute of Colorado. The biggest mistake you can make when trying to interpret your dream is to think it's actually about the person you just dreamt about, according to Taub, because dreams are symbolic. Instead, he says, focus on the hidden content of your dream. Your subconscious mind, or your dream, picks the best possible representation for something that it's trying to symbolize. So, if the content is about your ex, you need to look at how that ex symbolizes something within yourself. The dream is actually about you, not your ex. Think of the people in your dreams as the vessel for your emotions. You are the one who created your dream. It's like an art piece of your emotions and represents all parts of you, says Marion Frank, a psychologist specializing in dream analysis and relationships in the Philadelphia area. Dreams help us process emotions by encoding and constructing memories of them. What we see and experience in our dreams might not always be real, but the emotions attached to these experiences are, Frank says. Research out of the Sleep and Neuroimaging Lab at UC Berkeley discovered evidence linking emotions and dreams. The study found that a reduction in REM sleep resulted in a reduced ability to understand complex emotions in daily life. If you're dreaming about your former love, even if they were an abusive ex, ask yourself, what's the first thing that comes to mind when you think about them, says Taub. Even though it may be negative, often it's those qualities and what they symbolize that are pointing to things about yourself, he says. For instance, perhaps you just had an ugly argument with your current significant other. Maybe you acted poorly and the argument you had is bringing out a side of you that you feel relates to how your ex used to treat you. All right, let's say you had a fight with your spouse, then dreamt of sleeping with your ex. The anger you were feeling toward your spouse the moment before you went to bed is percolating in your subconscious. Your ex may have been an angry person, yet you're having a positive, intimate moment in your dream with this individual you actually loathe in your conscious world, Taub suggests. The ex probably represents anger, and it's more likely to be the angry side of you. Taub explains that dreams are about what just happened that day. All of the experiences of the day marinate in your mind. The dream is the commentary of what was going on up until you fell asleep. Your dream is pointing you towards something about yourself. However, if you're having recurring sex dreams about your ex, there's more to explore. Don't panic and take it as a sign that you belong with your ex. You broke up for a reason. You need to cast a wider net into your life. The sex you're having with your ex in your dream might not mean your current sex life isn't great, or that you don't desire the person you're in a relationship with if you're coupled up, Frank says. You simply might be needing more intimate connections from your family or your friends. The repetitive nature of your dream is your psyche giving you messages on a different level. Your subconscious is telling you that you're not quite getting the memo in your conscious life. So consider analyzing the symbols you're seeing in your dream, she explains. Your dream is like a fax machine, giving you notes to figure things out when you're awake. Dreams are a form of healing, Frank adds. What if your ex cheated on you IRL, but you're dreaming that you two are happy? Your ex betrayed you. Yet here you are, waking up at 3 a.m., confused because you were walking hand in hand with them on a sunny beach. There are so many metaphors happening in a dream. It's not about one thing, like only the ex, Frank explains. She says you have to work with the dream to see the layers. For instance, where is the location in the dream? The beach. What is the emotion? Bliss. And what did you first feel when you woke up? Closure? If you live nowhere near a beach and you've always associated negative feelings towards this person, your dream may be telling you that you're entering a transformative period in your life. What is it you like about the mind frame you're in during the dreamlike state, and then try to apply that to your everyday life, she adds. It might mean that you're ready for a change, a new job, or taking the next step with the person you're dating. The dream may not even be about the betrayal you associate with your ex, but rather the ability to move on and find closure with your past. Is it true that if you dream of someone, they dream of you? No. Sweet as that sounds, we don't become psychic mediums in our sleep. But Lane Dolphin, dream analyst and author of the Have a Great Dream series, does believe that people can share an extrasensory connection with someone they've been with for a long time. Though this isn't my way of looking at dream analysis, after 48 years doing this, I know without question that we are capable of ESP, and we are talking to each other all the time, sometimes with words and sometimes with thoughts. For example, Dolphin, and that's D-A-L-F-E-N, says she and her husband have been married for 32 years, and she says it's not uncommon for them to have a similar idea at the same time. Let's say I'm lying in bed in the morning, thinking to myself, gee, I would love to go to a movie tonight. And out he walks from the shower and he says to me, do you want to go see a movie tonight? This, she points out, happens a lot with in-sync couples. You might have similar images in your dreams, but for me, that wouldn't be a psychic kind of thing, Dolphin adds. Ultimately, there's no reason to assume they're dreaming of you, too. And they certainly wouldn't be having the same dream as you at the same time, like some romantic version of a Nightmare on Elm Street movie. I don't buy it, Dolphin says. In short, we dream about what concerns us most. That might not explain why you dreamt you were eating a plate of stuffed mushrooms when the thought of mushrooms makes you nauseous, but experts say you are more likely to dream about an ex than your current partner. A person from your previous life will represent something about you in a way your present partner cannot, Frank says. Most people wake up from a dream about their former lovers and immediately assume they must miss this person. Frank explains it's likely not your ex that you're missing, but an aspect of who you were when you were with them you're longing for. Maybe there's something in your current life you're unhappy about, or something is dragging you down and you miss the carefree, joyous way you lived years prior. Extrapolate the mood of how you felt and lived your life, and leave the people who were part of it out of the equation. But how can we tell if we truly do miss the person we used to date in our waking hours? Taub says we can never really know for certain if dreaming about an ex years later is about the actual outer person or symbolizes a part of ourselves. Dreams are all so personal. I would say that it is up to the dreamer to decide, to feel out for themselves. If the dreamer does decide to follow up with the outer person, the ex in this case, and it doesn't pan out, then that tells the dreamer it really was about something more subjective within them. Consider keeping a dream journal to make the recurring dreams stop. A dream is the conversation you're having with yourself about a very specific current issue that you're attempting to problem solve, says Delphin. Your unconscious mind gets the solution to what you want to do about a situation before your conscious gets it. Because the people and events in our dreams are symbols handpicked by our subconscious mind, you may learn something from jotting down what happened, how it made you feel, and what memories and feelings you associate with the things you dreamed about. Over time, a clearer picture may emerge regarding what your dreams are urging you to think about. The prize you get for remembering your dreams and recording them in a journal is that you can propel your problem-solving skills, Delphin says. And if you just want the X out of your dreaming life for good, give this simple trick a try. The way to stop dreaming about your ex, believe it or not, is to ask yourself to stop, Delphin advises. As you are falling asleep or even during the day, just say, "You know what? I've had enough. I don't want to dream about them anymore." And you probably won't. We're heading over into wellness now. Feeling both extra anxious and exhausted? It might be your thyroid. When this tiny gland slows down, all hell can break loose. Here's what to know and do. This article is by Cassie Hurwitz. Deep fatigue, random chills, thinning hair. I started experiencing these symptoms about a year before I decided to see a naturopathic doctor. After extensive testing, he found a few problem areas: my gut, my hormones, and my thyroid. I was pretty surprised, considering I've had regular physicals since birth, and that tiny little organ has never been an issue. Turns out there's a lot about the thyroid that I didn't know. You're probably a little familiar with the thyroid, at least in name, but its purpose, and maybe even location, is likely as mysterious to you as it was to me. The small butterfly-shaped gland resting in the front of your neck is a key part of your endocrine system. It produces hormones that, not to be dramatic, keep you alive by managing your metabolism, blood pressure, body temperature, and heart rate. But when you have a slow thyroid, also known as hypothyroidism, the gland doesn't produce enough hormones. Since many different parts of your body rely on your thyroid to function, says Rekha Kumar, and that's R-E-K-H-A-K-U-M-A-R, M-D, an endocrinologist in New York City, there are a lot of different side effects, including unexplained weight gain, irregular periods, fatigue, dry skin, thinning hair, brain fog, and low blood pressure. In other words, if your body is like a car, a healthy thyroid keeps it cruising at 70 miles per hour, says Rocio Salas-Whalen, and that's R-O-C-I-O-S-A-L-A-S-W-H-A-L-E-N-M-D, an endocrinologist who focuses on women's health. But if the thyroid is slow, you'll be crawling at 30 miles per hour. When to go for a tune-up. If you've been dealing with any of the symptoms mentioned above and your doctor has ruled out other potential culprits such as low iron, dehydration, and vitamin D deficiency, it's time to ask for a thyroid check. They'll test your levels of thyroid-stimulating hormone, TSH, which basically tells the gland to get to work. If your TSH is high, they'll also check for T4, a type of thyroid hormone in your blood. The gold standard for TSH blood tests is 0.5 to 4.5 miu/L, says Salas-Whalen. But your levels can fluctuate during the day or certain periods of your life, Kumar says, which can make it difficult to pin down specifics. During pregnancy, for example, it's perfectly safe to have lower levels of TSH, Kumar says. Some functional or integrative medicine does also have a narrow window for TSH and T4 levels on their blood tests, which can make things a bit confusing. In these cases, your lab work might fall into the normal or average window, but that doesn't make them optimal. The numbers should be interpreted in the context of who a person is, where their thyroid has previously been, how they're feeling, and what their health goals are, Kumar says. Could midlife be to blame? Perimenopause can further confuse the picture because of the many symptoms it shares with hypothyroidism. Brain fog, exhaustion, funky periods, sound familiar? However, Solace Whalen says this is usually a coincidence. It's more common to see hypothyroidism develop in the third, fourth, even fifth decade of someone's life, she says. This isn't because perimenopause is to blame for a sleepy thyroid, but rather that hypothyroidism can take years, even decades, to develop. But the double whammy of symptoms is pretty miserable. All that said, if you have consistently elevated levels of TSH plus the classic slow thyroid symptoms, your doctor will likely start you on levothyroxine, a synthetic version of a hormone that'll bring the thyroid up to speed. Your doctor should also check for antibodies. If those are present along with elevated TSH, the answer is probably Hashimoto's disease, the most common cause of hypothyroidism affecting 5 in 100 Americans. The autoimmune disease produces antibodies that attack the thyroid and weaken it over time, Solace Whalen says. With levothyroxine, Hashimoto's is manageable. Research also suggests that an anti-inflammatory diet can help people manage the condition. At the end of the day, your thyroid and how it influences your health is complicated. If you suspect that your gland is slowing down or is the culprit behind your woes, it's key to work closely with a trusted doctor who knows your health history and takes your symptoms seriously. With some care and attention, you should soon be able to hit that cruising speed again. We have run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Carrie Lawson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Again, that website is ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. Again, that number is 919-832-5138. So long until next time.